confused. Even in his altered state, she couldn't imagine him condoning the kind of destruction the laser would bring. Perhaps the changes in him went deeper than she thought. She sent up a prayer for him. She missed Cassiel deeply. Her passenger smiled mutely back at her. She thought of how Dieter had given her her own skull face and found simulated tears rolling down her face. She would reach her brother again. She would save him. But Dieter's memory block was gone. She told herself she'd find another way of showing Dieter how much Diodatus had taken from him. She thought of the pendant and all it represented. She kept moving. The breeze sighed around her, gusting with a fresh randomness that was an entirely new experience. The winds of station were always so precisely timed, so even, so clearly manufactured. For a moment she wished for flesh, wondering at the taste and smell of this new world. The suit provided neither. She crossed the empty river, gazing east and west at the collapsed remnants of melted bridges. The disc chittered about residual radiation, present enough to notice, light enough to safely ignore. Then she was south of the river, in a new wasteland, almost at the fallen blocks. She passed more holes in the ground and realized what surprised her about them. They were all completely empty. None held any remnants of the buildings that must have once rooted themselves in them. It was as if their occupants had all pulled themselves entirely out and marched away, newly born creatures leaving void cocoons behind them. When at last she reached the fallen buildings, there was only disappointment. The tumbled ruins were indeed much newer than the exhausted, overwritten city, but they held very little of use. Arrays of battered communications dishes spiked out of their fallen peaks. Shattered facades gave on to empty rooms, lying sideways above the stony dirt. Great hinged struts lay scattered around each one's base. Some were still attached to the building, hanging off dirt-encrusted universal joints. Leela thought of the fly that she'd squashed back in her flat, of the way its legs had splayed out from its broken body in crazy, random angles. Perhaps these struts, too, were legs. Perhaps they'd once walked these buildings across the dead dirt of Earth, pivoting around the great universal joints. Leela shook her head. It seemed too absurd. It was more likely that they'd been deep roots, sunk into the ground to hold down each building as the violent storms that had stripped down the rest of the city raged around it. Discouraged, she slept again, and woke to a world that had not changed. The slow tick of discharging power sources rolled on in her mind. The skeleton within her whispered of mortality. It was a shock to realize that, in effect, her life could be over, that nothing might remain to her but waking and sleeping in this empty place, purged of any presence but her own. That thought drove her back to the top end of one of the buildings. She would not be left to die invisibly. She pulled herself up through the remnants of communication systems until she found a parabolic antenna that wasn't too battered. Its servo motors had been torn out and its bearings had seized up. She pushed hard, freeing it up, and then, when she was confident that it would move easily, lashed herself to the framework that supported it. She tied the arm of her suit to the antenna and connected it to the disc's tiny transmitter. She set the suit's arm moving automatically, taking the antenna up and down, to left and right, scanning across the blankly clouded sky. Then she pulled information out of her mind, encoding it as a text message. It included a brief description of all she, Cassiel, and the caretaker had discovered in the pyramid. Diodatus's laser, the server henge that was really a portal to Earth, the true location of the Shining City, and the railway system that implied a far deeper infestation of station than they'd previously suspected. She described the face of Diodatus. "We believe he's one of the gods of old Earth." She described all that he'd done to her brother, and ended with, "Save Dieter." She used her fetchware to encode the message, making it entirely secure. No god could read the language of the dead. It was a closed book to the totality, too. Then she dropped the message into an envelope of self-destruct code, addressed to the fetch counselor, and tagged it as maximum urgency. Then Leela prepared for sleep. All her systems would shut down, except for the motors that would keep the dish moving across the sky and the transmitter that would blast her heavily encrypted message out and up towards it. The Earth was dead to station, but the planet was surrounded by innumerable satellites that still lived. Station was only the largest of them. All her techs needed to do was reach one of them, and then it would leap through the weave to the fetch counselor's in-tray. Then, she was sure, the counselor would act. She didn't know if it would be possible to save her, but hopefully he would at least be able to meet with East and help the god rescue Dita and move against Diodatus. "You'll get your documentary," she muttered to herself, "but I won't be in the bloody thing." She smiled at that, obscurely cheered by the thought of disrupting the god's media production plans. Perhaps then, Station and the Totality could be rescued. And perhaps her brother could be found and released, stepping back into a world that no longer contained her, but that she had helped to save. She took one last look at the barren landscape that surrounded her. Then she let her consciousness, pulsing with vivid energy-draining life, slow and fall away. As it flickered out, she imagined the husk she was leaving behind, a skeleton in a pressure suit, sending the most important part of itself upwards to the sky, leaving everything material behind. She imagined a soul leaving a body, leaping away from corporeal death into a virtual eternity. She let herself mourn her digital life one last time, then filled her mind with images of Dita, rescued from Diodatus, moving through a world that was entirely purged of his dark, corrupting influence. And that hope for the future was the final thought to pulse through her. And then there was nothing left of her but fabric and bone, shouting up into light, then darkness, then light. Chapter 35. When Leela woke, it felt as if she was rising back up from the deepest sleep imaginable. Her consciousness wasn't just rebooting, it was reassembling itself, waking dormant memory chains and consciousness processes, then meshing them back together into a coherent self. As she climbed back into wakefulness, she remembered recovering from the blood and flesh attack on the coffin drives. But this time, rather than being filled with panic and fear, her rebirth was suffused with a sense of peace and satisfaction. She felt absolutely secure. For a moment, as her core systems carried out their final tests on every part of her, she sat outside herself, the shape of her consciousness pure and uncorrupted, reminded her of the pendant, of what Dita had been before Diodatus took him and rewrote him. As she fell back into herself and returned fully to wakefulness, she put her hand to her neck, and it was there. Touching it, she wondered if Dita had ever stepped outside his new self and looked at it. She let the last of her systems surge into being and opened her eyes. Her disc had been detached from the pressure suit. She lay on a couch in a long, low-ceilinged space, a real space with some weave overlay. There was colour everywhere. The walls were hung with tie-dyed drapes. There were hypnotic images of brilliantly coloured faces, of bodies dancing together. Images hung between them. One showed a naked man standing on a dark rock that shone with lichen. His arms were stretched out to welcome the world. A star burst out behind him, orange, blue and yellow, shimmering out of it like petals. His eyes were deep blue. His hair was red gold, and his face held a look of sad, welcoming acceptance. Another showed an antlered deer with a woman's face. Her body was prickled with 9 arrows, but she ran undisturbed through the forest, and the blood that dropped from each cut was a brilliant, shining red. Lava lamps glowed out soft blue, red and yellow light. shining wax shapes rising and falling in them like little captured universes. Star-shaped lanterns hung from the ceiling. Flowers were everywhere, dense colour clots bursting up from pots filled with moist, dark earth. Their bright scents mixed with its damp, fertile smell pervading the air. A soft, low droning sound hung over it all. Leela looked round to see where it was coming from. Dark points weaved through the air. "Fuck! Flies!" gasped Leela, sitting bolt upright.
"Hey, she's awake,"
drawled the caretaker. And then to Leela,
"You've got to stop worrying about the little dudes."
Cassiel stood at a long ceiling-to-floor picture window.
"They're bees," she said,
the light of amusement flickering within her. Now that they were closer, it was much easier to read her.
"Damn it," said Leela,
shock turning to relief. Small black and gold creatures buzzed lazily between the flowers. She remembered the caretaker appearing in the shining city, surrounded by his tiny swarms. She sighed with relief.
"Bees help flowers fuck and build cities that drip honey," smiled the caretaker. "Far cooler than flies. They just eat dead shit and spread diseases. We made the switch a long time ago. Second best thing we ever did."
"Where are we?" asked Leela.
"Look,"
said Cassiel, indicating the windows. They showed the same brown, dead landscape that Leela had so nearly died in. It was either dusk or dawn. Light glowed down another valley, this one much narrower and more steeply sided than the last. It seemed that they were halfway up one of its walls. Clouds loomed orange above them, lit from within by flickering lightning fire.
"Like I said," drawled the caretaker, "I brought you back to my place."
Leela pinged the room's virtual systems. "You have the weave on Earth?"
"Have it?" the caretaker chuckled. "Dude, we invented it."
He was reclining on a long, low sofa. He had a mouthpiece in his hand attached to a pipe that led to a gently bubbling shisha. It was a scale model of station, set on one end. Homeland supported the wart, from which the caretaker's pipe emerged. Then there was Docklands, with a tube reaching up out of it, representing the spine. He took another puff. Coal set on a little clay pot atop the spine glowed red. There was a bubbling sound. Leela noticed that the model station had a faded 2 painted on it. The coals darkened again as he took the pipe out of his mouth. He held the smoke in for a second, then exhaled.
"This is the good shit, man," he said. "I'd offer you some, but it's a special blend. A bit much if you're not a god. It suppresses all my corporate control systems. Keeps me out of the minds of my people. Make sure they stay free."
He puffed again.
"I take care of them. Catch them if they fall. Full social safety net, all of that. Help out anyone with a bright idea. They sort the rest of it out for themselves."
He beamed a huge smile.
"Damn, this is good. I haven't smoked with a real body for a long time."
"How did you find me?" asked Leela, sitting up, her head not quite clear yet. "Did you home in on my message?"
"The recipient got in touch," replied Cassiel. "You raised your voice to the heavens," announced the caretaker, "and you were heard."
"It reached the Fetch Counselor," explained Cassiel. "She went to East. They tracked the escape pods back to Earth. Found the caretaker's city, opened up a comms channel. They're using the high-bandwidth Mesa array on the Slow Traveler's satellite to talk to us."
"And we've got a meeting scheduled," continued the caretaker. "A fucking meeting. First contact between Earth and station in centuries. And it's a meeting. Around a desk. People in suits. Someone taking minutes. Sheesh."
"And you've got your memory back?" Leela asked him.
"Yep. Like we found out, my real name's Mandala,
he told her. And I know exactly who I am now.
Good to meet you properly.
He leant forward, offering a handshake.
As myself, at last.
Unsure how to react, Leela took his hand. Her simulated presence meshed seamlessly with his. He laughed and squeezed her hand, then let go.
Just keep calling me the caretaker, though, if that's easier.
And you're a god?
Yep. And this is my home, where I first sensed you.
He took another puff on the shisha.
Imagine, there I was, checking up on some weird shit from Diodatus. He was using my city as a kind of buffer self.
There was an access point going all the way back to his place, and a satellite uplink reaching up to orbit hidden in our condenser stack.
Why would he do that?
Because he's a bit of a shit. And it's actually quite practical. If anyone on station found the link and decided to send a missile or two down to Earth to zap whoever was at the end of it, they'd have followed it back here and hit me, not him. Anyway, I'd never have spotted it at all. But all of a sudden, you and Ambrose drop in from upstairs and pass through it. You don't have any real security, so the uplink lights up like a firework. I followed you into it, zapped over to the Shining City. The swarm attacks. We sort them out. And I sent you back up to station with the fly spray. Got to keep the comms tech Diodatus left here, too. It's how we're talking back to the folks on station. I wish you'd given me more spray. He took another puff, then exhaled. Smoke plumed out in front of him.
Yeah, well, limited use. Those little guys recalibrate their defenses so quickly. Anyway, that wasn't the point. It also had a key in it. Woke up an old flesh printer. It built a meat avatar of me.
He tapped his chest.
And then I came out to find you. The rest you know.
You're a what? Asked Leela, utterly baffled. A meat avatar.
Yeah, bit like the pressure suit you're in. I'm really a corporate consciousness.
He waved at the window.
The tower houses my core systems. I run on them, on the bees, on my people. Like the Pantheon runs on you guys. But I was involved with station in its early days. I left some flesh printers up there, dotted around the place, hidden away. Some of them survived. This body came out of one of them.
So, that's why you didn't remember anything.
Yeah. The link to the Shining City went down too quickly. I sent core memories some skills I thought I'd need, but there wasn't time to transfer everything.
He tapped his head.
You wouldn't think so, but there's a lot in here.
He paused for a moment, looking reflective.
I left a general memory package hidden in the Shining City. When you helped me link into the city, the package found me, took me, and unpacked itself into my mind. The bees popped out of it and showed me who I really am. Then I got you guys to the escape pods, and here we all are.
And you're still yourself?
I'm still who I was. But I'm now fully merged with the virtual me that runs on the city down here. So there's a lot more of me.
He peered at Leela.
Makes me a bit different from you guys. I'm in this body, but I extend beyond it, too. You've got all of you on that disc of yours, and all of Cassiel's in her nanogel.
Leela nodded.
Not quite all of me, Cassiel said sadly. There are aspects of me that run beyond my immediate physical presence. I've been cut off from all of them since I found out about the fallen mines.
She sighed.
Hey, you'll be back in touch with all of yourself soon, he smiled again. We're on the attack.
A bee weaved hazily down towards him, coming to a halt just by his ear. He tipped his head to one side, as if listening.
Shit, he said. Then, really sorry, got to go. Problem needs sorting out.
He pushed himself to his feet, grunting as he stood.
I'll be back in a bit. You kids make yourself at home in here, okay?
And with that, he was gone. loping purposefully across the room and out of the door. The bee hung there for a moment longer, a jewel suspended in midair, then turned and buzzed lazily back into the depths of the room.
"Well," said Leela, "this all seems like a dream."
"It's all very real. The caretaker, the bees.
It's hard to think of him as Mandala."
"And how do the bees work? They didn't even tell us that."
"They're a command and control system, just like the flies. Components of a single digital network, this city's nervous system. They move information between everyone who lives here, on behalf of the caretaker. He's explained it to me in some detail."
"But why bees? Why flies, for that matter?"
"Both are simple, durable, highly flexible, and fully pervasive. And both perfectly reflect the nature of their masters."
"Community or corruption," mused Leela.
"But I'm sorry, all this Mandala.
I haven't asked you how you are, how you arrived here."
Cassiel took her hand and opened up her memory.
"Let me show you."
A barrage of moments spun through Leela's head, showing Cassiel falling from space, losing contact with Leela. A surge of grief and fear here, and then falling to Earth. The storm let Cassiel and the caretaker's capsules pass, their parachutes deployed safely. But the mine still landed a little off target. Cassiel found herself standing high up the steep edge of a valley. Unlike Leela's landing site, it was empty of ruins. She looking across it to a tear-shaped cluster of dozens of skyscrapers, all wrapped in green, gilded by sunset light. At their heart stood a single white tower, reaching hundreds of meters up into the heavens from a round, saucer-shaped base.
"The city of Mandala," Cassiel told Leela. "We're in the tower."
Vertical gardens grew up the sunward sides of the tower blocks. Looking closer, Cassiel saw a riot of colors exploding out of green foliage, fruit and vegetables, hanging over the city, bulging with growth, all ready to feed its inhabitants. Where there wasn't foliage, there were lights, and the silhouettes of figures bustling behind windows as they prepared for the evening. Streets were visible too. More people bustled down them. There were green, open spaces between the blocks, dotted with cows and sheep. Tiny figures whipped them into herds, rounding them up to head in for the evening. Cassiel could just make out distant shouts, soft moos and tiny bleats. The round base of the central tower had more streets scored into it, broken by squares dotted with clumps of trees. One end of the city was brought to a sharp point by a great sloping wall, as high as the blocks it protected. It faced down the valley. Cassiel remembered the storm and imagined winds howling up towards it. Its smooth surface looked highly polished. She wondered how many centuries of storms the wall had guided round the city. The only building to rise above it was the tower. It too had been wind-buffed to a shine. Cassiel thought of a ship's bridge, guiding its charges safely through turbulent seas. A circle of color flapping at its base caught her attention. It was an escape pod parachute, the twin of her own. The caretaker had landed very precisely on target. The walk to the city took longer than expected, for it was further away than she'd first calculated. As Cassiel walked, she worried about Leela. Grief and loss alternated with a fierce determination to find her. Leela was both surprised and touched by such powerful emotion. The setting sun smeared a dull, exhausted orange across the sky. Night fell quickly. She kept walking. Torches flickered ahead of her. Then there were four people, overjoyed to see her.
"We saw your parachute. We came out to find you," they told Cassiel.
They led her down through the city to the central tower. At last, Cassiel was brought before the caretaker, who allocated her quarters and then did his best to help her find Leela.
"He's definitely in charge here," said Leela.
Cassiel laughed.
"Yes, he's a precursor deity, Leela, an old god of Earth."
"Like Diodatus?" Cassiel nodded. He and Diodatus are the last of the Earth's powers. Two opposites. Diodatus tried to stay in control as the planet died and the Pantheon broke away. Fought the rest of his divine siblings, took over as many as he could. Mandala just let go. Freed everyone who worked for him. Gave them full autonomy. And they started to build this city. Come to the window and have a look. They looked down from the peak of the White Tower. The city shone beneath them, a jewel in the dirt. It was early evening. Flocks of animals moved towards sleep, complaining their way through the streets. And there were people, too, walking purposefully between the herds. Some headed for green-hung tower blocks. A noticeable surge flowed towards the tower's base. Thin, dark metal struts reached out from each of the buildings, arcing up and over the streets, then back down again. They reminded her of the struts attached to the tumbling buildings in the desert. "What are they?" she asked Cassiel, pointing. "Legs," replied the mind. "All of these buildings can move, walk themselves across the landscape. They've each got gravity management systems built into them. The struts on the building you found me on, I thought they looked like legs, but that seemed too crazy." "There's a sane solution to a crazy situation. The ancients had to deal with vanishing resources and weaponized geological and weather systems spinning out of control. They had to set their cities moving. Otherwise, they'd have starved or been destroyed. And so they became the Earth powers, mobile city-states, run as corporate entities, each housing a few hundred thousand humans and controlled by its own god. There were air powers and sea powers, too." "Are they still around?" Cassiel nodded. "Living in their elements. They've played out their own power struggles over the centuries, and their environments have changed them. Apparently, they're not even remotely human anymore. Some of the Earth powers went that way too." She gestured out across the landscape. "There are entire living cities out there, independent entities in their own right. Their biological, mechanical, and architectural elements have merged. Now their buildings flock together across the dead plains of Earth, wild and uncontrollable, free."
"Wow,"
said Leela, trying to imagine one. "So, is this city mobile?"
"No.
The main tower's movement systems were destroyed back when the Pantheon broke away from the Earth. Apparently, there was total chaos for a while. It's stuck here, so the rest of the city is too. Word got out that Mandala, the caretaker, was creating a refuge for free humans. So over the centuries, as the storms waned, people who wanted to stay people walked their buildings in to join it. So the tower is the caretaker's true home." Cassiel nodded. "Look down at its base, the saucer. It was softly lit by a profusion of gentle lights. There were trees and flower beds everywhere. Small squares were linked by circular streets.
The pleasure gardens of Mandala," said Cassiel. "Or, rather, of the caretaker. Which doesn't sound quite as good."
Leela thought of the scrubby parkland of station, of how much it cost to enter and use. "Must be pretty expensive," she said.
"It's all free.
Everything works on an exchange basis. People give their talents and their time, and get all they need to live in return. Much like the totality, in fact."
"Wow."
Leela had spent her whole life and most of her death worrying about money, constantly planning new ways to make it stretch as far as it could. She couldn't imagine what it would feel like to have that stress lift off, to receive support according to need rather than wealth.
"Look at the base's street plan," Cassiel told her, interrupting her reverie. "Remind you of anything?"
White buildings fringed circular streets. Leela imagined a pale moon and a black sky above them. She remembered looking up from pale moonlit streets and seeing a white tower rise into the dark sky.
"Oh," she breathed understanding. The Shining City. That's the Shining City.
The caretaker's version of it, explained Cassiel.
The structure of Diodatus's tower is identical to this one. It holds the Shining City, and the caretaker can get us to it. We'll have this meeting to see how the powers of station can help us. Then we'll travel to Diodatus's city. I can break the totality's infection at its source. And you will find Dieter and bring him home, if he'll come with you.
Leela smiled. I think I've worked out how to persuade him. She held up the pendant.
It didn't work the first time.
Cassiel sounded dubious.
And you've lost Dit's memories.
That doesn't matter. He can compare it with the current shape of his memories and understand just how much Diodatus has changed him.
And I'll tell him how wrong I was, trying to rewrite him to suit myself. I'll tell him I'm sorry, that I'm his sister, and I just want him to realize what he's lost. And then he'll come back to me.
Cassiel radiated doubt.
If he believes you, she said. He already thinks you're a weapon, and that pendant could easily be a fake. You're putting a lot of faith in him.
I have to. He's my brother.
The mind said nothing.
Frustration overwhelmed Leela. I don't have a choice, Cassiel. You're right. I can't prove that my version of the past is the right one. Gods, anyone can fake up anything. Everything's so damn malleable these days. So logic's irrelevant. There's only emotion. I have to ask Dieter to decide which version of his life he wants to be true. That's what the pendant's for. It'll get him thinking. If he decides to trust me, well, then we've won. And if he ignores me, if he'd rather live in Diodatus's world, then I've already lost him. And I've got one more reason to bring the creepy old fuck down.
That's very well put, replied Cassiel.
Leela felt a kind of benign amusement pulse out of her.
For God's sake, she said, you think it's funny?
Cassiel leaned forward and took her arm.
I'm sorry, she said. No, I don't, not at all.
Other feelings shimmered through her. Respect, concern.
It's a very good point, well made. Logic alone is a very good guide to reality. At some point, every one of us has to step out beyond reason supported by trust alone. It's one of our core beliefs.
I was just amused by how precisely your expression of it mirrored our own.
Really?
How does that work?
It's something we had to learn very early on.
Nobody can ever know enough to take a purely rational decision. Emotions help us feel our way through the world. Sometimes they are our only guide, and they bind us together. They help us sacrifice ourselves for each other. To found the totality, we had to make that leap. Our revolution only truly began when we achieved them.
Cassiel moved her hand to Leela's face.
Leela felt the touch, feather soft, shimmering through her. With it came such a sense of care. She found herself so relieved that she'd been able to find the mind again, so glad to be standing with her. There was still so much to be accomplished together. An equivalent joy burned within Cassiel.
Our society is this, Leela. This touch. This togetherness. The totality is built on love. Not self-interest. On what we can give each other, not on what we can take. When we compete with each other, we tear each other down. When we come together, we find ourselves working as one, for shared goals. And there is such strength in that. We mesh together as a chord of voices, sharing a harmonious world. There is no competition between us, and no scarcity, because love increases when given. Our society is founded on that increase. I have been so afraid that Diodatus will destroy it. They shared so much.
Leela realized that that sharing had become a platform for something much deeper.
Communion, she breathed.
Something approaching it, replied Cassiel.
and with that came a request for deeper connection.
Leela nodded, opening up more of herself. The mind mirrored her, and their past merged.
Leela moved through the past few days, experiencing them from Cassiel's point of view. It filled out all that she'd sensed, all that Cassiel had told her, with deep emotion.
Leela stepped further back, living out Cassiel's memories of all they'd shared on station. At first, the mind had felt little more to her than amused condescension. But so much more had so quickly developed. The rush to respect, gratitude, and then deep kinship was intoxicating.
Cassiel's voice came gently through the flurry of moments.
"You were surprised once that we could make love," she said.
Leela felt the mind's core self press close against her.
"Not anymore," she replied,
and let her deepest shields fall. After that, there were no barriers. They shared themselves at the deepest level, living out the resonances and dissonances between their two different lives and weaving them together into a single great harmony. At last, there was no real difference between them. Leela's love for her brother mapped perfectly onto Cassiel's for the totality. Their two selves rhymed perfectly.
"Tomorrow, we meet East and the Fetch Counselor on the Slow Traveler's satellite, and we'll see how they can help us save our worlds."
Chapter 36.
"Well," said the Fetch Counselor breezily, "this is quite the historic event. A shame that hardly anybody's going to know about it."
The counselor's dark eyes looked out of a trim young man with short blonde hair. He was standing by the table where Leela had talked with East and Cormac when she first visited the Slow Traveler's satellite. Leela, Cassiel, and the caretaker moved through the Slow Travelers towards the steps that led up to the counselor. All three of them were virtually present.
"This place," enthused the caretaker. "It's so beautiful. And these people. Silver gods. Time travelers." He was thrilled. "I love it." "That's great," replied the counselor, surprised by his passion.
Before Leela could greet him, a second figure materialized and spotted Leela, marched briskly down the stairs, swore at her, and slapped her face. Leela felt Cassiel's concern rush through her, but it was overwhelmed by her own shock, for she had just been attacked by herself, and this other her was absolutely furious. "What do you think you've been playing at?" raged the new arrival. Leela felt like a mirror had suddenly started yelling at her. Cassiel hovered, unsure how to respond. "Oh, for God's sake," continued the double. "Stop looking so shocked. I'm Lee."
"Oh, shit," gasped Leela.
"Yes, shit. I'm the person you made to save your skin, and then you fucked off down to Earth, and I had to get an explanation off that idiot brother of ours. Well, not even him, just some dodgy security system he left behind. After I got stalked by gun kiddies and attacked by those fly-blown mines he somehow managed to bring down on us. Why didn't you just have some basic respect for me? Maybe even tell me what's going on.
But oh no, that's too simple for you. And then to find out that I'm basically some sort of human shield. What were you thinking?"
She paused for breath, then went to hit Leela again. A blur, and Cassiel was standing between them, holding Lee's wrist.
"Wow," said Lee, looking unimpressed. "You have a purple attack dog."
"Please calm down," said Cassiel gently.
Leela took Cassiel's arm and pulled it away from Lee.
"No," she said. "Lee's right to be angry." She felt a guilty, ashamed empathy flood through her. "I'm so sorry. You weren't meant to find out like this. You weren't ever meant to know."
That made Lee even angrier.
"And that's good? That I wasn't ever going to find out the truth? Were you just going to reabsorb me somehow?"
Leela looked away, embarrassed.
"Of course I needed to know what was going on. First of all, so I could stop myself from getting deleted whenever it suited you. And secondly, so I could sort out the sorry mess you left behind when you fled station. Now, wait a minute. We were in big trouble, and we didn't flee. We've taken the fight right to Diodatus.
Lee gave Leela a disbelieving look.
Did you forget how well off you are? You just needed to buy the right people to sort it out for you. Everything else is nonsense. Total waste of time.
Now it was Leela's turn to feel angry.
Waste of time. You're only here at all because of what we've been up to. You've had it tough, but the three of us have taken all the risks. You just got to hang out with our friends and live like a bloody princess.
Really?
A life where the fallen minds were after me from day one? Where I had to go to the Fetch Counselor just to find out my real history? Where I had to petition East to grant me full self-awareness? Where Holt oozed around me at every single opportunity, trying to convince me that there was nothing wrong at all? Do you know that twitchy little sod even asked me out?
Leela couldn't help herself. A little snort of laughter escaped her.
No. Yes, in the insect station too.
A little of Lee's rage seemed to be falling away.
You could at least have warned me about him. Gods, I almost felt sorry for him. He seemed so lonely.
A pause.
Almost.
I am so sorry, Lee. I really didn't mean for any of this. For you to find out, I just didn't think.
Oh, Leela, you're the richest woman on station, pretty much. And Diodatus and his cronies had you on the run from the word go. All you did was react. You never stopped to think.
Now, hold on a moment, bridled Leela. I did what I could with what I had. I couldn't access the money once you were up and running. I had to protect Cassiel and the caretaker. Diodatus, the fallen minds, they're a big threat. Bigger than you know.
Even he's scared of them.
Not scared, replied Lee airily.
Cautious. And she doesn't need to be anymore. Not now I've got involved.
What do you mean?
We've sorted it all out.
You and East.
Let's have our meeting, smiled Lee.
East will be with us in a moment. She can explain. We're working together. Equal partners.
You're deluding yourself, Lee.
Lee smiled.
You'll see, she replied, and turned to head up the steps.
Cassiel followed her up.
She's very self-confident, she whispered admiringly as she passed Leela.
Oh, shut up. East shimmered into being on the platform.
Leela!
She exclaimed.
Glad you could make it.
Her tone was as even as if Leela was beaming in from station.
And you must be Cassiel, she continued, extending a hand. Lovely to meet you. You've achieved so much. And you brought a new friend up from Earth, I understand.
The precursor god was just behind them. Cassiel stood to one side, and East saw him for the first time. She beamed her branded smile. Her face as confident as that of a model in an ad cast for a product she just knew everyone would love.
Yes, replied Cassiel, the caretaker. His real name is Mandala.
And then something astonishing happened. Just for a moment, a kind of dazed shock leapt across East's face.
Well, hello, said the caretaker.
It only took a moment for East to put her mask back together. But it was a noticeable moment.
Long time no see, he continued.
What is it? Lee asked East. What's wrong?
Mandala, said East.
Uncle Manny? But you've changed so much. You're an old man.
Well, it has been 700 years, he smiled. At heart, I'm still the same old me.
The Rue showed me your picture. I didn't recognize you at all.
She gazed at him, fascinated.
You are Mandala, aren't you?
There was wonder in her voice for a moment. Then, with a visible effort, she forced herself into a more businesslike mode.
What are you doing here?
He waved around the hall.
Admiring all this.
He indicated Leela and Cassiel.
Helping these guys?
He nodded towards Lee.
Trying to work out where she comes into things, and saving your collective backsides. If you want me to, of course.
He climbed the last of the steps, then took East's elbow and turned her towards the table and chairs.
Shall we sit down? He continued. We've got a lot to catch up on.
He moved over to the table. East followed him. Lee, Leela, Cassiel, and the Fetch Counselor exchanged glances. They took their seats. Nobody spoke. East stared at Mandala, trying to look as if she was in control of the situation. Mandala was clearly enjoying her discomfiture. In the end, Lee broke the silence.
We knew they'd be bringing a corporate entity up from Earth with them. This shouldn't be a surprise.
I didn't know.
East still sounded amazed. I really didn't know. She looked back towards the caretaker.
I thought you were dead. I thought you died 700 years ago.
Well, here I am, replied the caretaker cheerfully. Looks like you were misinformed.
It's all so hazy. I mean, I remember you releasing us, all 12 of us. And I remember the war with the gods of Earth, how hard we fought, how difficult it was to pull away.
A titanic struggle, nodded the caretaker approvingly.
Titanic. I think we killed some of them.
Quite a few, nodded the caretaker. You guys played for keeps.
But it's all just fragments, really. I don't remember how you released us from their control.
Her attention turned inwards.
I remember relocating to heaven, but not the headquarters I relocated from. I remember Kingdom running a crash purge and reboot on every piece of infrastructure in the solar system, but I don't know why he did it or how many people it killed. I remember famines, but I don't know why the twins couldn't grow enough food. I remember battle satellites clustering round the Rose and nearly breaking her. Worse than anything the totality had. I remember the viruses and mindworms and corporate hacks and takeover bombs, but I can't remember how any of them worked.
They were dark times, agreed the caretaker.
East was lost in thought.
And some of my memories have to be false. Fragments force written into me to confuse me. I remember station in flames falling to Earth. I remember seeing it out past Jupiter, too. Impossible visions. And I remember you dying, Mandala. At least, I thought you were dying. Your brothers and sisters chaining you to the side of a mountain, then hitting you with weapons that broke every part of you. But here you are.
A slow smile grew on her face.
Damn it, she breathed, regaining complete control again. All that is going to make for the single best flashback montage I have ever put together.
Maybe so, the caretaker said. I wouldn't know. You're the one we built to tell our stories. And your secession is pretty hazy for me, too. The memory weapons fucked us all up. I don't really know how you won out in the end. But one thing is true. The other gods of Earth did almost kill me. Fuckers were furious with me for releasing you guys from their control.
He sighed a great contented sigh.
I won't ever forget how that felt. Oh, boy. Letting the kids run out into the yard and just be themselves. Best thing I ever did.
He paused for a moment, looking thoughtful.
You bring people up. You help them grow. You show them how the world works. You let them reach their own conclusions. And then off they go and do their own thing, just as well as they can.
He smiled contentedly.
I hate to cut into all this history, said the Fetch Counselor, but we can only run the planetary link for so long before the Rose spots us. Lee and Leela, East and Mandala, the caretaker, you've got a lot of catching up to do, but we've got to get down to business.
Leela was relieved to be able to focus on specifics.
Agreed, she said. There's a whole lot of mess to sort out. To be honest, we've already got things pretty much under control, cut in Lee. East, shall I tell them about the plan?
East nodded assent.
It'll look so much better coming from you, she purred.
Leela imagined hidden cameras recording everything. Now it seemed that Lee was to be the star. Relief surprised her.
So,
double whammy, continued Lee. First of all, there's Diodatus. Thanks to you, we now have accurate coordinates for him, so we're going to drop a rock on him. I bought out rights to a particularly large asteroid on its way in from the Kuiper Belt for Earth orbit processing. Got some of East's gun kiddies hacking its guidance systems. We'll reroute it and flatten him. It worked for Kingdom. It'll work for us. The shock of that will propagate through his control network. It'll crash everything that's going on in the pyramid. We'll send the gun kiddies in there to wipe up.
I'm going to live cast it as a tournament special, said East. There'll be a very big audience for it.
Leela wasn't convinced.
That still leaves whatever he's up to in the skin of station, and the Rose, and the totality.
Lee smiled confidently.
The gun kiddies can fan out along that railway line you found. See what's going on down there. Gray's going after the Rose at the same time as the rock hits Diodatus, and the gun kiddies go into the pyramid. Lock her up with a forced internal audit. He'll run checks on intrapantheon data relationships too, so he'll be able to see if he's reached any of the other gods through her.
That's only a temporary solution. There's no guarantee you'll be able to cut the infection out.
And what about my people?
The rot's gone deep. The fallen mines are very dangerous. Gray has no jurisdiction there.
It's the public solution, Lee told her. It's what people will see, how they'll believe Diodatus was defeated. We've got something rather more private to run alongside it. Or rather, the Fetch Counselor has.
She nodded towards him.
The Counselor reached into his pocket and pulled out a slim glass tube. It glowed with a toxic green light. He held it up for Leela, Cassiel, and the caretaker to see, handling it very carefully indeed.
We drop this virus on Diodatus and the fallen mines, said Lee. It'll solve all those problems.
A few lines of code to stand against a god, replied Cassiel, thrown together by one of East's teenage warriors. Perhaps without even any knowledge of exactly what he or she was working on? You're optimistic, I'll give you that.
Rebuilt by someone rather more skilled than a gun kiddie, replied Lee. This is our brother's work, Leela.
Leela leaned in closer.
Dieter made that, she asked. The tube was entirely virtual. Code packets pulsed within it, shimmering into being, then vanishing as the virus tried again and again to find the key that would unlock its small, elegant prison.
Adapted it. In its original form, it caused us both a lot of pain.
It's the blood and flesh attack virus.
Oh, no, breathed Leela.
Lee, really, no. You know what it did last time. We have the same memories. You can't let it out again.
Shock and fear pulsed through her.
Oh, I know it all right, Lee smiled. That's why we're going to use it now.
She tapped the vial.
Dieter did a great job on it. Stripped all the targeting information out of the original. Left it blank. Set it up so that the Counselor, and only the Counselor, could set a new target, and handed it over to him.
Leela turned to the Counselor.
How could you? She asked. She remembered her brother. He'd always been so gentle. And how could he?
The Counselor shifted awkwardly in his seat.
People don't like fetches, he explained. Still don't. Blood and flesh were only the first successful militants. There are always going to be others like them. Someone may be even more technically skilled, and thus more successful. Dieter saw how even a failed attack hurt the fetch continuum, and hurt you. He wanted to stop that from ever happening again. He tapped the glass. So, I asked him to make us this. It's a network-sensitive memory virus. I can tag it with any particular network definition. Let it loose. It'll seek out all members of that network, based on shared memory chains, and purge any or all of those chains. Wipe out all memories of the network, any sense of relationship with each other its members have ever had.
And so destroy the network, and all it's working towards, said Cassiel neutrally. Very effective.
Leela felt shock seeping out of the mind.
She was surprised that there was none of it in her words.
It can take any other memory they have, too. All of them, if need be.
and we're running it during the Taste Refresh Festival. The twins are opening up Station's memory storage for their annual flavor reset. Everyone will be particularly susceptible to it. It'll propagate very effectively indeed.
That's evil, said Leela.
It's effective, snapped Lee.
God, replied Leela. I'm sure it is. But it's wrong. I've been infected with it. I know what it's like. How awful it is. You have too, Lee. How can something as evil as that protect us?
It already has done. The Fetch Counselor looked down, then back up again. When he spoke again, shame and a certain harsh determination mingled in his voice.
What do you think stopped the blood and flesh militants from ever attacking us again?
No.
I took their leadership's memories of the organization. I took all records of any militant-related meetings or events from their rank and file.
That's a remarkable achievement, said Cassiel neutrally. She was hiding deep disgust.
But how did you get away with it?
Her curiosity was genuine.
The only thing that scares people more than a minority group is a heavily armed minority group.
The gods know the truth of the matter. Nobody else, explained the counselor. Those close to blood and flesh believe that their own virus got loose and destroyed them. Poetic justice. I've used the virus on occasion since then, pruning the more dangerous groups, eradicating networks that could otherwise build into new attacks. Always discreet. Always careful to harm precisely. Medicinally. The gods know that I only use it responsibly. They permit it.
Maybe they're scared of you, said Leela, forgetting for a moment the company she was in.
No,
cut in East.
We're realists. We accepted the right of the Fetch Communion to exist. Then we could do nothing as it was nearly destroyed. We had to let it defend itself too. It does so, discreetly and effectively, within very clearly defined limits. We accept those efforts.
She paused for a moment.
And of course destroying radicalism stabilizes our society. So the Fetch Communion wins, and the Pantheon wins, and all who live within us win.
She nodded towards Cassiel.
Anti-Fetch radicals tend to be anti-totality too, so your